And welcome back to another episode of Me, the Concerns, Me Boy Eli.
It's me, Joe.
And we're here to talk about something interesting that's happened recently. At the time of this recording, the new trailer for Netflix's other attempt at a live-action adaptation, Avatar The Last Airbender, the second time we've tried this, hopefully, may God be with us, this will work.
Yeah, you know, this has been sort of a thing that's been talked about a while. I mean, we had a trailer a couple months back. This is sort of, like, I think the latest one.
Mm-hmm.
As the show will be premiering this year, I just forgot the date off the top of my head. But, you know, it's,
It's the 2nd of February. 22nd, sorry.
Yeah, so at the time of this recording, a bit about a week from now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's gonna be, interesting. Right, it's, like you said, the second ever live-action adaptation of the Last Airbender. The first one being, most famously, the Last Airbender movie by M. Night Shyamalan.
You said famous. I think the correct word was infamous. Because that movie, I think I said it before, I understand some of the decisions he's made in that movie, is considered to be, like, one of the worst adaptations to put in on screen. And, like, one of the worst films in general.
Yeah, you know, it's, a lot of people have, sort of the, overwhelming opinion of, like, it was a bad movie.
Really bad movie.
To be fair, I think I remember we went to watch this movie in the theaters when it first came out.
And yes, and young us didn't know shit about storytelling.
Yeah, and I think even we were kind of just like, well, that was a thing.
Yeah. That was a thing, and a thing we saw. But now, here's the second attempt. And now it's kind of a movie, it's going to be a series. There's a lot of stuff that is implied through the trailers, also in the new stuff that we got beforehand. So not only are we going to talk about that, we're going to talk about our initial thoughts on it. I think the initial thoughts should be first. Joey, what are your initial thoughts seeing the trailer?
Well, I mean, overall, I think they've sort of nailed the style of The Last Airbender visually. You know, like, everything looks pretty much what you expect it to look. I mean, the bending itself and the action does seem pretty on par with how you see it in the animated show. I'm gonna do my best not to bring up The Last Airbender movie, but I mean, like,
it's kind of hard not to. Especially when you see the choreography.
It's so nice when the firebenders don't need, like, a source of fire to bend. Which, you know, that was always one of those interesting decisions of, like, okay, I kind of get where you're coming from this, M. Night. Or, like, well, everyone seems to have their sources of bending except for fire guys. I feel like, you know, to balance it out. And it's like, well, that's what makes them so potent, right? That makes them more threatening, because they are the ones that can, like, literally bend fire from their own bodies, right?
Aside from, like, the airbenders and, like, the earthbenders who can bend anything that is within radius, I guess, would probably be the same. You know, because airbenders, they just need air. Air is everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a earthbender, so long as there is a substance made of the earth, they can do it.
Yeah.
Waterbenders need water, but as the show progresses, we kind of learn that you kind of don't need to be near water, or you don't kind of like, or like when the example of Toph, right? She found a way to bend metal, which was thought to be
impossible.
Yeah, which to which her discovery was like, no, like metal is just a different kind of earth.
Yeah,
if it's pure metal, then it's like, no, we can't do shit.
Yeah, there's certain properties in the metal or whatever that like he was able to see and thus bend. But yeah, more to the point, like I said, visually it all like pretty much lines up faithfully with the original series, right? Like it all just looks and just feels right.
Yeah, it look everything about it, to the look of certain characters, to the vibe that characters like Iroh gives off. So I see Iroh and I'm like, oh yeah, this guy looks like Iroh. Even the two main leads of Zuko and Aang's actors kind of give me that vibe as well. For me, and my impression was that, like, man, this is looking really, really good. I really hope they don't fuck this up. Because this could be easily fucked up. Like, we're adapting from, you know, 2D animation to live action, a lot of people feel like that's really not really lenient, you know, kind of like makes the idea of animation kind of pointless, you know?
Right.
And I get that, and I 100% agree with that. For me, is okay, what changes are we doing? Because there's clearly going to be some changes in the vein that the kind of changes that they did with the live action One Piece. Because I'm getting a lot of that. Now, the question is how well are you going to execute it? Because I thought, for me personally, I felt like the live action One Piece executed well. And we'll talk about that in a minute, too. But no, generally, I'm very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Optimistic?
Optimistic. Casually optimistic. Cautiously optimistic, that's what I was going to say. I said casually. But it looks pretty good. I'm with you on the bending, because that was always the weird thing about the live action one. And I think it's probably the last one we'll talk about the live action one, aside from, like, you know, questionable ways to adapt it. Just whenever, you know, the famous Earthbender sequence.
Yeah, in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
When compare that to, say, the shot of Bumi doing some earthbending stuff here, and it's like, yeah, that's how that should look. That seems appropriate.
Yeah. So that's really what I'm looking forward to. Now, what I mean by some of my concerns, though, I know you've heard of this as well. One of the main concerns that I've had from when this was first talked about being made is that some of the creative leads who worked on the show, I don't know if it was the original, you know, creators, you know, Joaquin Dos Santos, that's his name? I'm probably thinking of the MMA fighter, but I know the last name was Dos Santos, some of them left due to creative differences for the show, because they were originally on, you know, the creative team, but they left because of creative reasons. That makes me wonder, personally, like, okay, what happened, right?
Yeah, that was probably one of the big things from the production side of things that was coming out, you know, when the show was announced and all this stuff. Like, we had some of the creatives behind the original Avatar: The Last Airbender working on this one, and they decided to part ways.
Okay, so I got the names wrong. I was thinking about someone else. But the it was created by Michael Dante, DiMartino, and Brian Konietzko. I hope I pronounced those names correctly. But continue.
Yeah, but so basically, you know, like, it talks of creative differences. And, I mean, it kind of led to some memes of, like, oh, yeah, we're just going to, like, oh, yeah, you know, like, edgy Avatar, you know, all this sort of, like, classic sort of like Netflix sort of like adaptation sort of thing. I feel like that is probably a point of concern, right?
Yeah.
Of like, what exactly was the creative differences here? Because I don't think they ever actually...
No, they never almost never say what the creative differences is, right? It's not until like later on, like years later, that we find out what it was. And oftentimes it depends on how well that you know, project has done well.
Right.
Right? Because, like, it could be something as simple as, no, these two shouldn't be this way. They should be this way. This is how the show is. Oh, but we're trying to do something different. You know, that kind of thing, right? And I get that. But it's also one of those things that I'm concerned about, because what is Netflix trying to do, right, compared to what the original creators want, right? It's one of those things where, like, what did these guys want, and was it reasonable, right? Because there's sometimes where I'm like, because it's coming from an artist's perspective, like, I don't want to be limited. But at the same time, there are times where I have to accept my limitations and maybe work around them to progress.
No, definitely, right? Like, it's one of those things of, like, this is the, you know, like, the creators and stuff, like, all right, this is our baby, right, we've made this, and, you know, they have, you know, questions of, like, how exactly are you making this, do we even approve of what you're doing with the source, you know, all that stuff, right? And the thing is that, I think, to bring up the movie again, the creatives did not have really much of a say in the movie, right? Mm-hmm. If I recall correctly, they didn't have much of a creative control. It was all Shyamalan, basically. So I feel like perhaps some of the creative differences is just from that, right? Of like, hey, you know, we didn't like how we were sort of like cut off from like creative style things from the movie. We don't want to have that thing happen here again. You know, that sort of thing, right? And maybe just from like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, maybe like they're just smaller creative differences. Like, no, it can't be like that. Because you did mention some things, at least in far as the trailer, that seems to imply that they might be doing some more stuff with certain characters, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, as far as we know, this will cover the first book of the series, which is, you know, Aang reawakens, you know, all the way up to, like, him learning, you know, how to use waterbending, all that stuff, right?
Going all the way to the Northern Pole. And, you know, that kind of stuff. Shao and Zuko's rivalry, which was epic back in when I watched it and rewatched it recently. I was like, oh, yeah, that's the reason I like this show kind of stuff. And actually, funny enough, rewatching that show, I forgot how, like, it's a very serious, like, show, but it still felt very, like, childish? I don't want to say that word.
It was age appropriate.
Yes,
I'm guessing
that,
is
yes,
probably what
yes,
you're thinking, right?
Yes, yes.
Like there were various serious moments that that the audience could focus on, but at the same time there was enough, you know, brevity and
nuance.
Fun stuff for like kids to like enjoy, right? The comedy of like say Sokka or like various other characters.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But as we progress, it becomes more mature and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know,
like moments are given the amount of weight and the weight that they need.
Yes, it's so surprising that a show like this came out the time it did and like being allowed the things they did, because like it's kind of crazy that they kind of had this show going and like. I was a kid. I don't remember most of the shit that I remember watching as a kid, or like how like some things like just didn't click until like I got older, right? This is that show for me right now, because I was like, fuck, that was kind of nuts how they just went ahead and did that. And you know, then we have Korra, which like I feel gets hated on for a lot of reasons. I don't agree with the hate, but I really do appreciate how much more mature that story was. And how some of the more mature elements in that. But no, to your point, there does seem to be some kind of changes. And the question is, okay, what are we trying to do with those changes?
Yeah, because something that I think people have been noticing is that...
Something's hard not to notice.
mainly it's more of the characters with Azula... and Ozai,
yeah,
right, being shown more prominently, which, to be fair, that was always a interesting thing,
mm-hmm.
right, of, like, the Fire Lord was never really seen in the first, in until, like, the third season, like, we didn't get to see his face, well, I guess until, what, second season, like, or was it third season?
It was third season, he was mostly shown through, like, images,
or like, he was just, like, in the shadows, right, of, like,
yeah, all you heard was Mark Hamill's sweet, sweet voice.
Yeah, you know, that's how you got to see the Fire Lord. You know, they built him up to have a presence, and when they finally showed him, you know, it's like, okay, that all right, that makes sense. You know, I'm pretty sure we get scenes of what is Fire Lord Ozai, and that's always one of those interesting things.
Yeah.
Of, like, you know... how, like, if you're not going to do, like, this sort of dark buildup of this guy in the background,
mm-hmm.
you know, who's essentially our final boss.
Yeah.
It's like you're clearly wanting to do more with him.
Mm-hmm.
And what exactly is that going to lead to?
Yeah. Even Azula, who didn't show up until, like, the end of season. No, she... Okay. To those who know, those who are going to probably be yelling at us. She does show up at the end, you know, early in the first season, in the episode of The Storm, you know, because she's like a background character, but everyone's like, she looked kind of bad, though. Like, she looks kind of, like, way too well designed to be just, like, a background character.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's you know, Zuko's sister, right?
Yeah, and we know who she is by the end of the first season, because Zuko talks about her, you know, we're introduced to her, and then season two, she fucking blows up, and then season three is like, what the fuck? She went cuckoo bananas.
You know, that's sort of her, like, she basically is charged with the same task as Zuko, except, you know,
she's scary.
Yeah, Ozai's like, nah, you better beat your brother at this.
I fucking hate your brother.
Yeah, he's a disappointment.
He's a little bitch.
You're the good child.
You're the prodigy.
Yeah, so, you know, there is that sort of sense. And it's very clear that we do see a shot of her here.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's one of those things of like, all right, we're introducing her a bit earlier than usual.
Yeah.
Where does that lead?
Because it's not
to?
Like the way the animated show was where she's kind of like a well-designed character despite being a background character at first. Because that's how she kind of was presented to us, right? It seems like we're building her up. Doesn't look like we're having those Fire Lord be like this shadowy figure. And this is what I'm saying about the sort of how the live action One Piece did it. If you guys watched the show, that episode, you know, you guys probably know what I'm talking about. Because in the show, they introduce a lot of elements that don't really show up till like way later in the manga or in the anime. Like the introduction of Garp, Luffy's grandfather, the introduction of, well, the implication of Haki.
Kind
of shit. And if I had lost you, I'm sorry, that's One Piece for you. But, you know, it's that kind of stuff. Where even the conversation of, like, other stuff that, like, I know that because I read the manga. Or, you know, whatever. It's being written with hindsight, right? Because Fire Lord Ozai isn't much of a character. He is just kind of evil.
I mean, that's why I sort of mentioned him as a final boss kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
He is essentially... He's the end goal, right? Like,
yeah.
He doesn't really have a whole lot of motivations other than that I just want to rule the world kind of thing,
yeah.
Right? Like, all the other characters have a bit of nuance to them in terms of the villains, right? But it's very been clear from the get-go that Fire Lord Ozai is just a bad guy.
Yeah, and so my hope with the show is that they kind of flesh him out more because later on, if you know the story of Fire Lord Ozai, not just from the show, but also from the books, which I have read, he is still very just evil. No nuance, just evil. Now, granted, I'm not saying a villain should have some nuance. It's okay if they're just evil for evil's sake. But considering how the writing is for, like, Avatar, it kind of feels like, you know, Ozai should have some level of, like, nuance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, because, like, even in the comics, he just becomes, like, sort of this, like, yeah, just the villain, evil, ill kind of stuff. I mean, Azula's always been felt more like the true antagonist, I guess.
Well, she has a lot more interesting things about her that make her an antagonist. Obviously, she is way more, like,
proactive.
Yeah, I guess proactive, but I was going to say more crueler
than
Zuko in a lot of ways. She's just very, like, while Zuko, I think, grows as a person and learns to understand his mistakes and stuff, Azula is very much ingrained with, like, you know, the Fire Nation society and being seen as a prodigy and, like, you know, not knowing failure and stuff. And, like, you know, she like, obviously loses her mind a bit because she's like, how, you know, everything's been gifted to me, and then it's all falling apart. I don't understand. This is impossible, right? You know, like, he's always had, you know, that sort of character, you know, of, like, crisis of her, of, like, just sort of, like, how is it, you know, such and such is happening to me. This could never happen to me. I'm, like, you know, I'm a prodigy. I'm the best. You know, that sort of thing, right?
It's also the question of whether or not her mother loved her. Because that was always, that was one of the key things about her mental breakdown was her talking to the ghost of her mother.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you never loved me. I was like, no, I did love you. But it's also like her being like, this is what she would say, but she hates me kind of stuff.
Mm.
So, like, she was always more the interesting villain. So, the question now, even for the show, like, now they have this opportunity, will you, like, explore these characters more or keep them the way they are? If so, then kind of what is the point of this, of, you know?
Well, to be fair, we could say something similar of the Last Airbender movie, because that movie also shows Fire Lord Ozai,
mm-hmm.
You know, pretty early on. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't really do much with him. He's just sort of there. I mean, granted, you know, if the movies had continued, which, you know, I doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But if they had, who knows what M. Night would have done with the Fire Lord. I mean, obviously, Azula shows up at an end credit scene to set up a sequel, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's very similar to, you know, her role in the show, right? Like, hey, I'm tasking you to find the Avatar, you know? You're the only one that can do the job. But yeah, that's sort of the interesting thing. I guess when it comes down to it, just two notable characters that we know from later on in the seasons are apparently being set up more earlier than you know, than they were in the original. How will that affect pacing of the plot, you know, all that sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I do sort of find it interesting, because when you're talking about, you know, some of the aspects that they added to the One Piece live-action anime that don't show up until later on.
Yeah.
Is that it's sort of like, it's kind of one of those interesting things of when you're adapting a long-running series or, like, just any sort of series where they kind of just wrote it as they went along.
Yeah.
Not saying, like, they had a, you know, they were just, like, you know, half-assing it, right?
No. It's one of those things where, like, the sometimes it's not developed till way later.
It's one of those things of, like, I like to think back to, it's not like how, what happened in Dragon Ball Z during the, Cell saga.
Yeah.
Where it became very apparent that, like, things were kind of changing every so often because, Toriyama's editor wasn't just liking how Toriyama was taking the story. You know, that sort of thing. In this case, it's like, all right, we know this stuff will be important later, and rather than just, you know, trying to, like, talk about it when it shows up, let's try to at least add bits of foreshadowing and, like, hints at some of these things happening later on as to make it seem not as weird or
mm-hmm.
out of place or out of nowhere that stuff like this is starting to happen now,
mm-hmm.
which I hope is not really what they do with Azula and Fire Lord Ozai, where it's like, oh, you know, why don't we ever see the Fire Lord? Why is he just a shadowy figure? Well, he's here. That's about it, right? That's
mm-hmm.
what he looks like. Okay? Are we going to get anything else with him? No. But now your question has been answered, audience. But I didn't... Okay. I wasn't really expecting my question to be answered. And it's like, oh, who's this character back here? That's Azula, Zuko's sister, and
yeah.
Here's her whole spiel.
You know what it might be? The most we're going to get them is in that flashback episode of The Storm, where we find out about how Zuko got his car.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be more of an extended version of that episode to make it, you know, more dramatic and, like, make it more sense kind of thing. Because, like I said, Azula is just kind of like a well-designed background character in that episode. And we know it's Azula because, like, we know now. But, like, at the time, it was like, damn, that character right there next to Iroh and Shao, she's way too well-designed to be just a background character.
Right.
And she's gonna happy. She's like, yeah, kick his ass. Kind of shit. Kick his ass, Dad. So, like, yeah, no. Now we'll have context of who that character is. And probably more context and with the dad, probably not. But it's like, that's at most what I feel like we didn't need to do with that. And yeah. But I think one thing we can say about the show that looks like it's got well, and like you said to yourself, the aesthetics, the look. They got everything down right. We even get into the Kyoshi Warriors, which we never got in the movie.
To be fair, I think there were in, like, a deleted scene for a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, the Kyoshi Warriors stuff is always, you know, I think that's probably one of my favorite parts of the original show. I mean, heck, you're even getting, what is her name, Jade the Bounty Hunter?
Oh, yeah. We're going that far back.
You know, I guess that's sort of the interesting thing that I'm thinking about is because, I know that the One Piece anime was, like, what, 8 episodes, right?
It was 8 episodes.
And it covered a fair chunk of different arcs all
mm-hmm.
in the go, right?
Yeah.
I do kind of wonder how exactly are they going to be formatting the Avatar show, right?
Yeah. How are they going to do that?
I feel like the thing is that There's a lot of episodic moments in Avatar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously it has its grand narrative, right, that it's sort of developing, right? But there are also various moments where they just go out of the way of things. You know, they're like, there's the episode where they go to that island with the sea serpent thing, you know, sort of messing around, right? Remember that?
That was a Kyoshi Warrior episode.
Was that the entire Kyoshi Warrior?
Yes. Where they just kind of like ride it? Or are you talking about the one that's supposed to be the bridge to get to the Earth, the Ba Sing Se?
I'm probably thinking of the second one, honestly.
Okay, I.
But my point is that there's a lot of episodic stuff that happens. Matter in the grand scheme of things, right? Like, it adds good character development stuff, but it's not like an integral part of
like,
the story.
You can cut that out. Like the episode of the two warring tribes.
Yeah.
That one was so boring.
I mean, we know that stuff, like, because, I mean, there's important stuff, right? Like, say, heck, Jet's whole storyline with Jet
mm-hmm.
and his band of rebels is going to be part of the show.
It will be 8 episodes.
Okay, then.
But continue.
Because it's, like, at least 20-something-odd episodes, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting to see how exactly they sort of lay everything out, right?
Yeah, and they're also implying the spirits episode. You know the one where he goes into the spirit realm?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, it looks like, because I'm reading through the episodes, and I'm like, oh, that's a lot. That's a lot to cover in such a short amount of time in episodes. So that's one thing.
I mean, to be fair, the episodes are probably going to be at least an hour long, right?
Yeah.
And the original length of most of the Avatar episodes were at least, like, maybe 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not impossible to get all that stuff down, but it's more of, like, it is going to be one of those, like, I wonder how pacing is going to be handled here, right? Like,
yeah.
It's very clear we're going to be covering all of Book 1 in these 8 episodes. It'll probably be paced, because I feel like that's probably one of the interesting things about, say, the Last Airbender movie, was that for as bad as it was, it covered the first book all right.
No, yeah, you're right. There's parts of it I wish they would include, like Omi and the Kyoshi Warrior, Suki, the spirit stuff, Roku. Roku wasn't even in that movie.
No, you had a talking dragon, though, that was kind of looked like Roku's dragon, so he's kind of one of those weird things. I don't know. It's going to be one of the, you know.
Yeah.
It condensed the story enough to fit a movie length, mm-hmm. but you always felt like you could have maybe gone more for certain things. Like, because there were, you know, with the show, though, you know, like, there's probably less incentive to do that,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, I'm sort of wondering, like, okay, but what will they cut out?
Mm-hmm. That might be one of the reasons why there was creative differences.
Well, I mean, obviously. but, yeah, you know, it's going to be one of those interesting sort of, like, new, like we're going to see how exactly they handle certain storylines and various things, and we're going to have to be like, okay, but, you know, like, did it pay off as well as you think it did? Did it not? You know, that's, you know, mm-hmm. gonna be a whole smorgasbord of interesting takes coming out in the next couple of weeks.
No, I agree. We will be covering that too. Probably more myself than you, because between the two of us, I am the binge watcher.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, I think I've always like. Don't get me wrong, I like Avatar, you know, I liked The Last Airbender. Legend of Korra was alright, you know, it was whatever.
I mean, to be fair, Nickelodeon kind of screwed the pooch on Korra.
Oh yeah, no, I definitely remember how they really sort of botched all of, like, Korra.
Yeah, they did.
I'm pretty sure, what was it, the last episode was only available on their website.
Oh yeah, the last few episodes of Book 3 was only available through online because it got way too violent for audiences. You remember, it was only supposed to be one series, one book, and that was it.
And then, like, hold up now. That first episode did pretty good. More. But we only wrote, nope, more. Oh, damn it.
Yeah.
But, like I said, I mean, think about Korra, though. Like I said, it's surprisingly much more mature series than, like, most people will give it credit for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, the execution was the problem with that show. But, no, yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic about this. I want it to do good, because I am a fan of Avatar: The Last Airbender. That show hit a lot of people in their childhood, man. I remember being a kid and being like, man, I kind of want to be an earthbender, or I kind of want to be a firebender, you know?
Yeah, it was very, you know, it's kind of one of those things of, like, how the hell did Nickelodeon not make more of this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how is it that Legend of Korra got botched so badly by Nickelodeon? And how is it that only now does Nickelodeon realize, oh, shit, Avatar, this is stuff we can work with.
Yeah.
Let's have a whole Avatar Studios thing. Let's like, get some of this stuff rolling,
yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah. And I know a lot of, like all our Asian friends, if you guys remember Kelvin, if you guys have been here that long, that was one of his favorite shows because of the representation. Like, that show did a lot of stuff that, like, you know, paved the way for a lot of things. Even Korra was a very good show and came to the LGBT community.
Yeah, I mean, heck, Korra was, you know, like, they ended the show with her getting together with, what's her name?
Asami,
you know, like, that's...
They don't show the kiss, but you know what happened.
Yeah, and if Nickelodeon decided to put that on TV, they could have gotten some brownie points, I'm just saying.
Oh, they could have gotten a lot of brownie points.
They would have, but,
you know. We gotta make way for SpongeBob, bro.
Yeah, you know, classic, you know, Nickelodeon.
Classic television.
But yeah, you know, it is kind of interesting to see, like, just, like, only now, years after, you know, both shows have ended, that, like, it's, like, become apparent, like, oh, yeah, no, these shows were, you know, liked by a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
They have a fan base, why don't we make stuff with it?
Yeah, and like I said, it's had a very important impact, not only in, like...
I mean, like, I feel like so many, shows that come out nowadays sort of definitely have that sort of Avatar flair to them, right?
Yeah, they try to go with that. It's one of the things that kind of attracted me towards, like, the Voltron Legendary Defender show, because it gave me that sort of Avatar vibe. Same thing with, like, the She-Ra cartoon that came out on Netflix. Well, I granted, some of that stuff did not pan out so well, as Voltron, specifically. It still had that, you know, it still, you know, very much held that importance of, you know, trying to tell a long format story in a cartoon coming from a west, from the west.
Yeah, like, you know, I think there's a very notable trend when it comes to certain western animated shows of, like, there's not a whole lot of action oriented sort of thing, right?
Not a lot of action, not a lot of story driven stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, Avatar was sort of, like, the big one, right? Like,
yeah.
It really focuses on that stuff. I mean, we have, like, other stuff in the past, like, that sort of have, like, that action seg down. Like, Samurai Jack, you know, like, the story isn't really, it's very loose, right?
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
Because it works. I mean,
but, you know, it works,
yeah.
Right? But point is, like, Avatar and Korra both have that sort of spectacle to it, right? Or not spectacle, but, like, they
mm-hmm.
have that sort of balance of action and, like, a long-form story, you know? Like, they truly are, like, the closest thing I think American animation has come to, like, being anime, and some people will just argue that, no, it is anime.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And, you know, that's a conversation for another time. No. But, you know, no, it's without a doubt that Avatar has a very special place with a lot of people's heart. It was a very imaginative series, a very beautiful world, a world that, you know, a lot of people kind of had a lot of fixation with. And it really changed a lot of people's idea of animation, especially long-form stories. You can see that in, like, any of the stuff that came out after Avatar. And hopefully, you know, the show does something really cool. I don't think it's going to have that kind of staying power as the cartoon, but if it helps people go check out the cartoon and realize
how cool this show was, you know, back in the day, I'm all for it. And I think that's a good place to end the episode. If you guys enjoyed what you heard, be sure to follow us on all social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We're most likely on Instagram. And there you'll find a link to all podcast sites. We're officially part of like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, all of the like, and a link to the YouTube for your audio listeners out there who want to put a face to the voice. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. And we do have a Patreon for any form of support. And hopefully Avatar comes out well. That's all I want to say. And yeah, that's been your boy Eli.
Great job.
You guys have a good one. Peace.